Hi everyone, my name is Kim Klinger. I'm an alcoholic. And I am chairing the Monday night Blue Chip Speaker Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with one or more year of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that the alcoholic men and women in our rooms tonight and listening later on in AABlueChipSpeakers.org desperately in need will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Well, tonight I had the pleasure to introduce our speaker. The woman tonight has been a part of my life since 1995. I have gotten to know Kathy for many years, and we seem to kind of come in and out of each other's lives, but that's the great thing about AA is that this makes our world a lot smaller and our recovery a lot stronger. And so I knew that Kathy was speaking tonight, decided to come over here with some friends, and I think you'll really enjoy this her message of hope and recovery. And with that, I will give you Kathy H. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kathy, alcoholic. If my story goes south, I'm just going to read to you. But anyway, I'm honored. I'm a little, nervous. I know you guys haven't been thinking about me telling my story tonight, but I've been thinking about it all day. So my sobriety date is July 15th, 1995, and I have, grace of God, not found it necessary to pick up a drink. I have done a lot of things in my sobriety that most of you probably did before you got sober, but I've heard and I've been able to grasp on to do not pick up a drink today no matter what, and I've been able to do that. I have a sponsor and I use her, and I have a home group, and it's the 9:30 I Can't We Can here at NABA, and I am actively going to meetings. And I tell you that because in my sobriety, I haven't always done that. Mostly I've had a sponsor, but haven't always used her. And I haven't always had a home group, or not one that I was active in. And I haven't always gone to meetings. So it's a miracle. It's just a miracle that I have not drank. Because I was one of those people who wasn't sure that she was an alcoholic. And here I am. Sometimes I still can't believe I'm an alcoholic. But when I the first time I got the message that I might be an alcoholic was I was married. We were living in California, and I had a 6-year-old son that was completely out of control. Well, his mother was completely out of control, and so my husband and I took him to this little doctor, Dr. Viola Freeman, in the Cove, La Jolla, and because we like to do swanky things, when we're alcoholic. I couldn't just take her to the doctor in Encinitas. I had to, get some. Well, anyway, and so we were in there with our son, who was just having a lot of behavioral problems, and three questions into the examination of our son, she looked at my husband and I and said, "I think you have a drinking problem in the home." And we were like, "We don't have a, we don't." And so, So we said, well, you know, we want to be willing and we want to be good parents. Let's just do what the doctor suggests. And so this was in October, and we said, we won't drink until Christmas. And so, well, we never made that day. We didn't make it to Christmas. And in fact, in January, we were separated. So alcohol was kind of probably the glue that held us together until we weren't, you know, able to use it anymore. And so I moved here, you know, because geographical cures always work. And we were divorced, and I had two young sons, and I had family here in Atlanta. And so here I moved, and I was just struggling. And I can't say that my drinking was taking me under, but my emotional turmoil was just showing everywhere around me, and especially in my home. My husband used to tell me, Kathy, you know, you're nicer to people you don't know, to complete strangers, than you are to your family. And that was true. You know, I raged. My one son, he got everything that I could throw at him. And so I moved here, and I went to a counselor because, you know, I didn't want my drinking to be a problem, and I really didn't think it was a problem. But I went to a counselor, and I didn't know she was giving me the test, because we were like question 10, and she's like, oh, I think you're an alcoholic. You know, so I said, okay, well, what's your next questions? And then we learned about three or four, and then later my ears were on fire. You know, I don't know if you've ever had that experience when you know some truth, your body knows some truth, but, you know, intellectually I wasn't really, you know, it just wasn't. And I said, you mean you think I'm an alcoholic? And she said, yes. And so I you know, I'm a pleaser. I like to please people. And so I wanted this woman to like me. And so I said, okay, well, I'll check it out. And so she gave me the name of Ridgeview. And I went to Ridgeview, and the intake nurse, you know, she said, well, you know, you probably don't really need to come in to treatment. You're an alcoholic that can probably make it by just going to AA. And I thought, well, I guess I thought there was a spa or something involved, you know, because I just felt like I was unworthy enough, you know, and that's another part of my disease. I'm never worthy enough. And I really didn't think that, one, I wouldn't have to work for 2 weeks, and I wouldn't have to be mom. My kids, someone would take my kids for 2 weeks, and I thought, you know, I'm just not worthy enough for that to happen. And so I said, well, okay, well, then I guess I'll go to an AA meeting. And so I went to Skyland. And you know, the funny thing about Skyland, so my sister lives in a neighborhood that's just behind Skyland, and y'all know where that is. It's over in Brookhaven. And I would ride by there on occasional evenings, and there'd be these, like, this big crowd of people out there in the parking lot, you know, and they were smoking, and that's kind of interesting for a Presbyterian church. I knew it was Presbyterian because that's, you know, it was a church our family had gone to. And so when I found out there was an AA meeting, you know, before that, I told my sister, I said, hey, have you been to that church? And she said, well, I've been wanting to go. I said, well, let's go. So we went on Sunday. I mean, you guys weren't there. It was like, well, where are all those people that were, you know, laughing? It looks like they were having fun in the parking lot. So anyway, so I got, you know, my first AA meeting was at Skyland. And I saw people I knew in that meeting. And you know, I'm the people pleaser. I didn't want these people. I care about what you guys think about me too much, you know. I mean, I love what you guys think about me. But to the point where, you know, I can't run my life about what people think about me. And that's been a huge piece of my sobriety. So I worked in the coffee business, so I mean that's pretty good odd, you know, chances I would run into somebody. I didn't know at the time, but I would run into somebody at an AA meeting because, you know, that kind of goes together real well. And so anyway, a couple of customers, you know, turned out to be AA friends, and they introduced me to my first sponsor. And that woman, she loved me until I could get the seeds and the willingness to try and learn to love myself. And that was a real foreign concept for me. And it took a long time. And I will tell you that I am not a, I've done the steps and I've read the big book, but most of my sobriety has been through the rooms, through you guys and the people, women and men that I've met in the rooms that have really helped me stay sober. So, so you know, and I told my sponsor, I said, well, you know, I don't know if I'm really alcoholic. And she said, well, go and, you know, listen to the similarities and see if you can hear somebody say something that relates to you and understands you. And that took a long time. But what I really did like about Alcoholics Anonymous was the laughter. I love that you guys let me in and that you appeared to like me, you know. That was huge for me. And it kind of goes with the natural part of my alcoholic personality, you know. We like the fun, and this alcoholic does. So she, you know, one of those many times I said, I don't really know if I'm alcoholic or not. She said, well, you know, Kathy, I used to sit in the closet with a gallon of vodka and drink it, and I didn't think I was an alcoholic either. And I thought, okay, well, we know that's alcoholic. And so, but that helped me. And that helped me accept my alcoholism. I grew up in an alcoholic family. My father was the alcoholic who lost everything, lost his family, lost his work, died an alcoholic death, and that's the only kind of alcoholic that my family knows. So when I came into AA, and I don't know if any of y'all ever did this, you know, I thought I should get like a responsibility check, you know, I come into AA. Well, people that outside these rooms, they didn't see me as an alcoholic, you know, so, you know, my family, you know, I remember my mother saying, I think I liked you more when you drank. And, well, she's an alcoholic. Of course she does, you know. And I don't know if she's alcoholic. She's 87, lives by herself, and never really lost anything due to her drinking. And she'd give you the shirt off her back, but she won't not drink for you. And I think I was one of those alcoholics, you know, like I didn't always get drunk when I drank, but if you invited me over to your house and you didn't serve me some wine or some kind of liquor, then it was a short night for me. And or if I had a PTA meeting and it was from 5 to 7, those are hours, you know, hours where I didn't want to go with, alcohol in my breath, but I didn't know how I was going to get through from 5 to 7 without, you know, having a glass of wine or a gin and tonic or whatever. And I don't know if I said this, so you can put your hand up if I did. When I can remember my first drink, I was about 5 years old. And I was at, we were visiting my grandfather, and he had some kind of cheap wine in the refrigerator. Morgan David, little old winemaker me, kind of that wine. And I picked it up, and I chugged it back, and at the same time, my mom came around the corner, and I can remember that warm feeling going down my throat and my chest, and having some relief. And at the same time, this shame, I got caught. So that's my alcoholism, you know? Gave me my, when I was drinking, it always gave me a little bit of a relief, but right behind it was a whole lot of shame. And so some of the things I've had to work on since not drinking has been that shame, has been that guilt, you know, getting a blueprint for living. And so one of the things I wanted to read to you is the foreword of the 12 and 12. The one paragraph that says, AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual and in nature, which, if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. It has given me a list of to-dos, a list of steps to wrap my life around, because on my own, I'm going to do what I want to do, and you know, it's just not how my life works today. There are things I have to do, and I fight it, but there are things I have to do every day, and that's just a part of life. That's growing up, that's being responsible. And I was an alcoholic who wanted no responsibility, and I wanted you to take care of me. And I'm a slow learner. It is a miracle that I have not found it necessary to go out and drink, especially since, you know, I've spent a lot of time in this program thinking, I don't have a story, I don't do it right, you know, I don't know the steps, and I was, you know, telling that to somebody, and someone said, well, you know, you're really lucky you didn't go out. And I thought, oh, well, that's a very interesting way to look at it. Yeah, you know, I guess a few things you can do in AA is not drink, and you get to stay. And even if we do drink, we get to come back. I mean, there's just, you know, we have hope and love in these rooms, which I have a loving family, and I have wonderful people in my life that aren't in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But what I've been able to do most here is to like myself, and so I keep trying to get some kind of structure to this. I Google everything, and one of the things they talk about, you know, how do you tell your story? I go, am I really the only one that's done that? And it, so, you know, some people are very structured and succinct, and they do it this way, and others are all over the place. And so I'm an all-over-the-place storyteller. About 2 years ago, I stepped down from my full-time job and went part-time. And I have three children. My youngest is in her last year of high school right now, and I just felt that I was burnt out as heck in my job, and my you know, my voodoo economic thinking. I thought I could do this. I would just work part time, and when my daughter goes to college in the fall, well then I'll rethink this, the work thing. And I have a pretty good plan, but what I didn't plan on is that I would fall into this deep depression. And I also went off, and that's an outside thing, I know, but it's big in my story. And I've had to go outside the rooms to treat some things, and one of them has been a depression. So I also decided I would go off my depression medicines. And I told my doctor, but, you know, didn't ask anything. And that's something I do with my sponsors that kids me about it all the time. I get a problem, and then I figure out the solution, and then I call my sponsor. And I do a lot of things like that, you know. I didn't want to take these meds anymore. I'm tired of the pharmaceutical company, so I'm just going to tell my doctor I'm going off these things. And so I had to get real honest. And that's not something I'm comfortable doing, you know. I like to tell you a funny story. I like to embellish things, but I've had to get real honest. And one of the things that's helped me to do it is reconnecting with AA and getting a home group and doing some service work and you know, talking to my sponsor on a regular basis. I'm not a disciplined person. I know I'm not alone in here. Some of us are more disciplined than others, but I'm just not a disciplined person. And so one of the things I've had to do is to put my an alert on my phone that every Monday at 11 o'clock I call my sponsor. And at first it was real hokey because it was not natural, you know. It was like, wait a minute, I only want to call you when I'm, you know, down in a crisis, not on this regular check-in thing. But I've done that. And that one small thing has helped me so much because she lives south of Atlanta, so I don't get to physically see her often. So, I don't know, about 6 weeks ago I called, I don't know if your sponsor's like this, but I can call her and she can be like kind and loving and compassionate and supportive, and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I'm doing it right. Or she can just be a witch, you know, like really like be direct to me and hold me accountable, and, you know, well, how many times do you want to talk about this? And so she said, when's the last time you told your story? Well, I never tell my story. I think I told my story 10 years ago here in this room, and I haven't been asked since. So, and then that was on a Monday, and so that Thursday I was down there just downstairs, you know, mind my own business. And Tim came up and asked me and a friend of mine if we tell our stories, and I think my friend got out of it. Oh my gosh. So here I am. Sorry, you guys. This has been in the works about 6 weeks. I've tried to get out. I've been getting the flu on Mondays for the. And so anyway, I'm here, and I'm here, and y'all are here, and I'm grateful for that. And so when I got my current sponsor, it was about 10-11 years ago. I was she's back up a little bit. So one of the things it's still with me. You know, I still want someone to rescue me. And so when I got sober, and one of the things, that I remember reading 20-something years ago in the AJC was how to meet men. Go to an AA meeting. You can meet men at an AA meeting. And I knew I didn't want to meet a man in a bar. You know, you'd meet a drunk there. So I came to AA, and I was sober about 2.5 years, and I met someone in AA, and I have a child from that relationship. And you know, one of the things I've learned in AA is that you look back but don't stare, just glance. And that was my daughter's ticket in, and I just kind of leave it at that. I try in a general way to describe that it was crazy. It was crazy. I got an agenda, and I met somebody that would, you know, that had agenda too, I guess. Who knows? But that was a it was a crazy thing to do in sobriety. And so, and I've had to, it's a blessing in so many ways, because I got to, over the years, make some amends to my two sons. I have two grown sons. And, you know, their mom was pregnant when they were 13 and 14. I mean, that's pretty uncool, you know, have your parents, and not even be married. So it was, you know, it was a real ego deflator, to say the least, for me. But that relationship, even though we were married by, I don't know, a month or 2 months or I don't know how long, we spent a lot of time in the legal field. And so my life was very disruptive for a number of years. And I, like I said, I'm just so grateful I never did drink about it. I had people around me that I'd met in the rooms that surrounded me with a lot of love and gave me a lot of support and a lot of encouragement. And I was able to dig deep and do the things that was necessary, which was to provide a home for my daughter and my sons, and to work, and to you know, that there's not a whole lot left, and go to AA, and there wasn't a whole lot left of time to be crazy. And that's one thing I've found this last 2 years. I've had so much time on my hands that I'm not good with time on my hands. You know, it brings out the irritableness, the discontent. And so, and I look back over those years, thank God I was working full time and I had three kids in my house, because I might not be here. You know, my I always said about my alcoholism, I had a real healthy fear of alcoholism since my dad was an alcoholic, and I used to, you know, think that I don't quit things. You know, I just don't quit things. So I used to be really fearful that I would become an alcoholic. And you know, in my looking back in my out, the easiest thing for this alcoholic to give up was alcohol. But it was everything else that comes with living a sober life, that's really been hard. Because it was hard to quit, you know, being in charge. So anyway, 10, 11 years ago, I had this new sponsor. I was fresh out of another relationship, and it's not been my event in sobriety, but that's okay. I had, she asked, you know, she wanted to go through the steps, and I said, oh gosh, you know, because the truth was, I'd only been through step five with my first sponsor. And, I mean, there was just always so much drama. I couldn't get still enough or honest enough to actually go through the steps. And so, but I don't know, a few of you know my sponsor. I mean, that's just the way you do it with her. You just do the steps. And so, you know, and she said, you know, because I'm such an egomaniac with an inferiority complex, that I wanted to just do AA right. You know, I wanted to have the language down. I wanted to have... I thought I would come into AA and I would meet a man, get skinny, and make money. And none of that's happened. Not in the way that I wanted to, but I got so much more. And I have heard people say that over the year. You know, if they said make a list of things you want in sobriety when you first come in, how it would be so different. And it is so true. I mean, my spiritual, I mean, I didn't have a spiritual life. I went to church, but that was, you know, that had no spiritualness about me. That I mean, it was there, I guess, the whole time. I had not tapped into it. And so we went through the steps. And I was powerless over alcohol. I got that, but my life was unmanageable, and my sponsor helped me point that out. And And then, you know, came to believe that a power greater than us can restore us to sanity. I didn't really know what sanity looked like, you know. I definitely knew I didn't feel it. And so she helped me go through, and I'm going to use my book here because I have no memory anymore. She helped me find those roadblocks of prejudices and that self-righteousness that I just so automatically wear. And I got to start a relationship with God of my understanding. And then step three, you know, she also was able, very good at pointing out some of the things that I did do well, because I'm very good at, you know, self-predication. Is that the right word? You know, like, you know, putting myself down as a joke. And I mean, there's a part of that that I like, and I'm, you know, okay with that. It's like the asset liabilities. Some of my assets, they just fly right over to a liability. And so my sponsor was so helpful and pointing out that it wasn't all bad. I'm not all bad. And one of the things that it's great that I've always had a willingness to do what my sponsors have said. And I meet people in the rooms who, you know, I have a son who's, you know, he's not willing, he needs to get into these rooms, but he's not willing at all. And I'm just so grateful that I always had this willingness. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. That took me for a long time. I just couldn't get it right. I just didn't understand it, you know. Like, I could tell you about Mr. Brown, you know, and why, but I could never get it to have it relate to me. And so that took, you know, several attempts. And, of course, you know, that one thing about the importance of thoroughness, well, I was as thorough as I could be at the time. And my sponsor had to keep repeating that to me. We're not talking about perfection here. Step five, you know, one of the things I really appreciate that confession, you know, when we say this stuff out loud to somebody else, it just takes some of the air out of it. And I love that, you know. And I mean, I've been able to use that through helping my daughter with things, or helping my kids, or even people at work or friends that's outside of the program, how magical that is. And I think we all get that here. When we speak the stuff that's going on inside of our head, it just helps us breathe a little bit easier. Step six, boy, I got stuck on that one because, you know, entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. I couldn't get that. We're entirely ready. That I'm just ready. You know, it doesn't mean I have to know what they are or that I have to do it right then. And so once she helped me understand that I'm just going to be ready to do it, I could go on to step seven. And, you know, I still have to do this very often. A lot of times I don't even know what the shortcomings are. I don't have a word for them. And what I learn in the rooms, I hear you guys say, put words behind self-pity or resentment this self-centered fear, you know, fear of 100 different ways that fear can envelop me. And then step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed. Well, I had a ton of people on that, my eighth step. And my sponsor said, you don't have to have everybody you've ever met on that list. And she helped me because, you know, I have that backwards thing about, I think it's all my fault, but I don't want any of the responsibility. And so she helped me write that, you know, there are some things and she, you know, she taught me, and I had about, I guess, 11, 12 years of sobriety. So some things had cleaned up. And And so I guess if you are waiting to do your steps, which I don't recommend, but, you know, if you're 12 years sober and you're doing your 8 steps, some things have fallen off, so it can get a little bit easier. But, and, you know, I wanted to make amends to certain people, and, you know, like my ex-husband, my first ex-husband, and she said, you don't need to. And, you know, bless that man's heart, because when we divorced, he went out in such a bang that I got to just stand there and say, oh, isn't it awful? You know, I was like the alcohol that comes out of the cellar, you know, ain't it grand that the wind stopped, Ma, you know. That poor guy, he danced out of our marriage with such a big hoorah that I didn't have to do anything about my part for many, many years. And so, and I have made amends with him and his wife, who was part of the triangle. And she and I have a relationship today, and that's only because of this program. And you know, and I do it because of my kids, my sons and my grandchildren. You know, that's what I've learned to do in AA. Step 9, made direct amends. Step 9, I'm from my living amends, you know, and I have my one son that really caught the brunt of my disease and that raging part. You know, I check in with him every so often so that, you know, he knows that I just think he's wonderful. I think that he has turned into this really neat young man that's a good husband and a good father and just a good human. And, you know, so these living amends are everything to me. Step 10. So, you know, we all learn from each other today in the meeting. One of the things that's really helped me this last 2 years is to do some service work. And so I do a Monday morning meeting. And so today I read this paragraph, and a newcomer, somewhat newcomer, said, you know, that's like step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, right in that one paragraph. And I'd never heard that before, so I'm going to read it to you. But I couldn't really quite tell what was step 4 and what was step 5, but I'm going to read it anyway. It's right after the promises on page 84, big book. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. That was huge for me to read. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately. That's step 5, I guess. And make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. You know, step 11, this is something I've been putting into practice, and I've heard about it. I've tried it before, you know, get up in the morning, get on your knees. Well, I just don't do that. But sit quietly and do some meditation, read something, do some meditation. And I'm a believer, you know, it's taken a long time, but I am a believer of that. And the days I do that, I am at a peace that I just have not been able to get any other way. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And, gosh, where would we be without that? So, thank you so much for letting me tell my story, and I'm going to close with that. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Kathy, for your honesty from the heart, sharing your alcoholism and recovery program with us.
Okay, I've asked Cecilia to come up and hand out the chips.
Hi, I'm Cecilia, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Cecilia.
And we have these chips to mark our time, not necessarily quality. And we have... Thank you so much for your story. My son is also graduating this year, so I'm kind of freaking out. If you want to come in or come back and try not drinking...
Awesome.
After 30 days, we offer this one. Awesome. 90 days, we have a red chip.
Ooh,
anybody else? 90 days? 6 months? Yellow? And 9 months? Green? And 4 years? Or one or many? We offer a blue chip.
I hadn't picked up one of these since I was here last year.
Congratulations, Brian. Any more birthdays? Yeah. Any other birthdays? And we always offer the white chip one more time, and we can leave it up here if anybody is shy. For later, and thank God for the chips you hold. Well, thank you for everyone who picked up a chip tonight. This is great. Thank you, one and all, for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
Stop.